This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Across Massachusetts, homelessness is on the rise. The recession, too few jobs, and a lack of affordable housing contribute to this continuing crisis, which affects first and foremost children. More than 3,700 families with children get help from the state's Emergency Assistance Shelter Program. For many, that means living temporarily in motels.
But according to advocates, an increasing number of homeless families with children are being left out in the cold. They blame sweeping changes pushed by the Patrick administration and approved by the state legislature to the way the state helps homeless families. The goal is laudable, to spend more money on permanent housing and to help families stay in their homes and avoid becoming homeless in the first place. But advocates say the new funding comes at the expense of the most vulnerable families, those who need shelter now.
In a moment, we'll talk about this difficult challenge with a homeless advocate and the state's Undersecretary of Housing and Community Development. But first, meet Sharna Levere. She's 45, unemployed, and receives disability because of debilitating back pain. She was recently homeless, forced to live in her car with her 19-year-old son, who's also unemployed. Now they have emergency shelter from the state, a motel room in Weymouth. And Sharna Levere, welcome to Radio Boston. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
So if you don't mind, tell us first how you ended up being homeless.
I ended up being homeless from fleeing a domestic violence relationship with my husband. You know, I left the home, and I went to a domestic violence shelter. A few months later, he kicked my son out of the home. My son is 19. They didn't allow him to come to the shelter because of his age. So I was forced to leave there. A friend put us up for a little while, but it became overwhelming for her. At that time, because I had been staying at a friend's house, they told me that they couldn't help me.
So, Sharna, this was when you went to apply for emergency shelter with the Department of Housing and Community Development, right? And they
Correct.
Told you they couldn't help you? Tell me why.
They said that they couldn't help me because I had a roof over my head, that I had somewhere to stay because I had been sleeping at a friend's house.
I see. But in fact, you couldn't stay with your friend anymore because that was no longer tenable. So what did you do next?
I tried to find other places to stay, which I wasn't successful. So me and my son wound up sleeping in my car. We slept in the car for a couple of weeks. In between me sleeping in the car, I went back down there to apply again and let them know that my living arrangements have changed, and I was now sleeping in my car with my son. At this point, they told me that they would send someone out to investigate to make sure that I was staying in my car.
And did anyone from the state actually come to investigate your living arrangements?
No, they didn't. Almost a week went by, and no one showed up.
So how did you end up where you are now? We mentioned that you're living in a motel in Weymouth. This is part of the state's Emergency Assistance Shelter Program. So you did end up getting help from the state. How did you end up there?
I ended up here being at the right place at the right time. I had to drop some papers off at another office in the building. And upon driving up, I seen these young people standing outside talking to other families or whatnot. And the young lady asked me if I could tell her my story, which I proceeded to do. I told her my story, and a few days later, I got a call from a woman named Ruth, who at that time asked me, could I go back down to the office? And at that point, they told me I would be sitting there all day, but they would have placement for me.
I see. Now, you mentioned Ruth. That's Ruth Borquin. She's a housing advocate. We're going to be hearing from her shortly. So, Sharna, overall, do you feel that you were able to get the help you needed from the state?
No, I don't. They didn't help me. They didn't even come to check to see if my son and I were actually staying in the car. You know, it was a bad thunderstorm one night, and, like, they still didn't show up after that. So I didn't feel like when I went to that office, I got the help that I needed.
So, Sharna, give me a sense of what you're hoping for the future for you and your son. What's the plan to get out of this temporary housing situation and avoid homelessness?
Right now, I am applying for different disability, low-income housing. My son is in school, and he's also looking for a part-time job. And I'm just ready for us to start over, like, just a new life. I don't know. He's 19. I don't know how much longer he's going to want to be with me, but that's our plans as of now.
Well, Sharna Levere, we wish you all the luck in the world, and thanks for talking to us.
Okay. Thank you.
So that's Shona Levere talking to us from Weymouth about her living situation. Hers is just one story of homelessness, but there are thousands more across the Commonwealth. And the question now, do the new guidelines that govern how the state helps families like Sharna's make it more difficult for them to get emergency shelter when they need it? Joining us now is Aaron Gornstein. He's Undersecretary of Housing and Community Development for Massachusetts. Welcome to you and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. Also with us, Ruth Borquin. She's an attorney and advocate for low-income families with Mass Legal Reform Institute. Sharna referenced her when we were talking to her a moment ago. Ruth Borquin, welcome to you.
Thank you very much for having us here to talk about what really is a crisis for families, but hopefully one we can fix.
Well, let me start with you, Ruth. Let's start with Sharna's story. She did end up with help and a roof over her head, but do you see what happened to her as part of the problem?
Absolutely. In August of this year, the administration adopted new regulations that say that many homeless families are not eligible for shelter, even though they've been kicked out of their last housing situation. They're not eligible unless and until they and their children sleep in a place not meant for human habitation. And that is part of a system designed to ferret out those who the administration thinks don't really need shelter. But the result of it is every day since these new rules have gone into effect, my colleagues and I across the state have gotten calls from families who are sleeping in cars like Sharna. Those are the lucky ones. They have a car to sleep in. Others are sleeping in South Station, in abandoned buildings, sneaking into hallways and trying to sleep overnight there, in parks and on beaches in the Commonwealth. And others are turning up in emergency rooms to find a safe place to stay, which is putting a huge burden on our healthcare system. We believe that this is an unintended consequence of the administration's policies to try to invest more in housing, but we think it is one that is not acceptable in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts and needs to be addressed.
Undersecretary Gornstein, let me come to you. What does Sharna's story tell you about this? Or respond, first of all, to Ruth Borquin's point. I mean, we know that Governor Patrick is committed to ending homelessness. More money has been committed to sort of long-term solutions. But is she right? Is there an unintended consequence here that folks who need shelter right away in the short term are being hurt?
Well, first, let me address Sharna and say how serious we take that issue. We don't want families sleeping in cars. We are doing everything possible to help families into permanent housing and to address their situation. She's now in a motel. We want to make sure she gets permanent affordable housing coming out of that motel. So hopefully there'll be a happy ending. No one should have to go through that. People are facing very serious challenges around domestic violence and other issues. And we're taking a comprehensive approach to trying to address that. With regard to what Ruth has said, I first just want to say that I appreciate and respect the work of Mass Law Reform Institute. I've been in the housing field as a housing advocate for 30 years. I've worked very closely with Mass Law Reform and Ruth. I respect their passion and commitment, and we continue to work closely to try and solve this issue, which is a very, very challenging and complex issue. We are working, the governor and lieutenant governor has made the issue of addressing homelessness a very, very high priority since day one when they came into office. We've done a number of initiatives over the past several years. We're now moving aggressively towards an approach of homeless prevention and permanent affordable housing, which is much more cost-effective and better for the families. So it's not only better for the families, but for the taxpayers as well.
And let me jump in. I'm going to let you finish, but I just want to be absolutely clear just so that listeners understand what you're talking about. You're talking about an effort to make it easier for low-income families to stay in their homes, right? So they don't become homeless to begin with, and to transition into permanent housing so they can stay out of homelessness.
Correct.
Right?
And we've invested in more than $50 million compared to last year in a number of new initiatives we think that are making a real difference in trying to avoid going into shelter, because I think Ruth and I and most of the housing community would agree that placing a family in a motel, one room with no cooking facilities, without play space, often isolated, not near transportation or jobs, is we want a better solution.
Right.
We want to work with the family as early as possible, refer them to community resources. We have a new program called the RAF program for homeless prevention, which we are referring families to who are ineligible. So Metropolitan Boston Housing Partnership is working closely with those families in partnership with the state. We've qualified more than 700 families under that new initiative. We're providing new rental assistance. We're creating thousands of new units of affordable housing, including supportive housing for families. We're preserving existing housing, including state public housing. We're working intensively with families to get them into permanent housing if they're in a motel.
Excuse me, but isn't the lesson of Sharna's story that what's been weakened here or what needs to be shored up is that final safety net? I mean, she doesn't have a house to get into.
Let me address the safety net, because I think we have a safety net in place. We have the most extensive emergency shelter system in the country. We have 2,000 apartments and beds, plus we are putting families in very expensive motels at $3,000 a month as an overflow system. We are taking care of thousands of families a month and throughout the state. And so there's a deep commitment to making sure that safety net continues. If a family is ineligible, we are referring them to various services and help in the community so they can avoid having to go into shelter. If there is any health and safety risk of a family being doubled up, the Department of Children and Families are going out. They're trained social workers to determine if a family is at risk, and if they are at risk, they are admitted to shelter. We are allowing families to come in on a presumptive basis if they don't have all the verifications. We have a waiver process. We built in a lot of checks and balances in the safety net to ensure that people don't end up in cars, and we don't want that to happen. We're going to fight every day to make sure it doesn't.
Ruth Borquin, please.
Well, if I may, that all sounds like very good intentions, but it's not what's happening on the ground. Sharna is by far not at all a unique circumstance. Lindsay Collins, a mother of a three-year-old who is 9 months old pregnant, who we informed the department that she was being kicked out of her last available housing, and we asked for one of those waivers that Aaron asked for to prevent her from having to sleep outside that night. We got no response. As a result of that, Lindsay and her three-year-old, while she was 1 week away from delivering her baby, slept on a beach in Quincy. A family in Lynn, including a working father, had nowhere to stay but their car. They slept in their car for multiple nights, and eventually we had to go and get a court order for them to be placed.
So what has to change, Ruth? What has to change here?
Yes, we actually think it's a very simple solution. In the regulations that were adopted this past August, there is this provision that certain families are eligible only if they're already staying in a place not meant for human habitation. Mm. And we are asking the administration to back that up, to say that they will provide shelter for families who are at imminent risk of having to stay in such a place, so that when their last housing option has been verified that it's gone and no one else can say where they can go, that they would be able to be placed in shelter before they have to go onto the streets or in abandoned buildings or in cars.
And explain how that varies with how it works today. In other words, in Sharna's case, it had to be verified that she was actually sleeping in a car.
And, I mean, in fact, in Sharna's case and in many others, there are others where families have stayed in cars for many days. They were supposed to be placed presumptively, according to what Aaron said, and then be able to get their verifications later. But what has really changed from August is that when most homeless families have been doubled up for a long time, and they eventually exhaust all their options for staying with other people, because how many of us can keep a homeless family with us for a very long time? And when they come to the end of that road, when they have verification that they're being kicked out, and no one else, none of these providers whose Aaron's talking about, can identify where they're going to sleep the next night, we are asking that they be placed in shelter. But now what the rules are is that even at that point, you're not eligible for shelter. You're not eligible until you show you're so desperate that you have slept in a place not meant for human habitation. And we think that is not a moral policy for the Commonwealth to have.
Aaron, I'm going to let you respond, but I want to invite our listeners in. So let me just put a phone number out. Listeners, we want to know what you think. Does it sound like these new guidelines that govern how the state helps homeless families are working or not? Have you been homeless? Do you know someone who has been? And if so, what do you think about this system? Does it need to be tweaked, changed, rewritten? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter and at Radio Boston. And now, Undersecretary Gornstein, let me ask you about what Ruth was talking about.
Sure.
It sounds like a simple tweak. Just loosen up a little bit and let these people who show that they are imminently about to to, you know, to be out of a house, to give them that temporary
shelter. Well, something we're looking at, and we're, let me just respectfully disagree, though, with the way Ruth's characterizing the regulations. I don't want to get into the weeds. I don't think your listeners want to back and forth on the details and technicalities of the language, but there is, if there's a substantial health and safety risk in the, if someone's doubled up, then they're eligible for shelter. There are four, there are three other categories of eligibility, including victims of domestic abuse, families who are facing eviction through no fault. So there are ways to get into shelter. People are getting into shelter as well. And then let me address the regulations. We've developed these proposed regulations in very close consultation with the legislature, with community organizations, with input from Mass Law Reform, Legal Services, and many other housing advocates. And based on that feedback, we've made close to 20 different changes. So it's not as if we said we had it perfect. No one does at the beginning of the process. Mm-hmm. We're listening to concerns to try and make further improvements if they're needed. And so I would just say that we're open. From the very beginning, we've been open to listening concerns. And that's what the public hearings are all about next week.
And I wanted to mention that, say something about that, because that, in fact, is an important bit of information to get out. There are going to be public hearings on this very issue.
We've had a very open and transparent process. Every single regulation and notice is on our website. We've been very open about our proposals. We've tweaked them and made suggested and have made changes based on various suggestions. So we're always, you know, looking at and ways to improve and refine them going forward, and that's what we're going to continue
to do. And
if
I may, those hearings are on Monday, this coming Monday, October 22nd at 10 a.m. in Springfield in the state office building there on Dwight Street, mm-hmm. and then on Thursday at the State House in Gardner Auditorium at 10 o'clock on October 25th. And we do think this is an opportunity for the administration to be able to hear from the people who have been affected.
Can I add one other thing? Let
me just ask you to hold that thought, because I really want to get some listeners into this conversation. We've got a lot of folks backed up on our phone lines. Let's go to Marissa, who's calling from Arlington. Hi, Marissa. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. So I worked at a nonprofit that served families who were at risk of homelessness or eviction, and also I helped families access shelter, and I also attended some of Ruth's trainings at Mass Law Reform, which were incredibly helpful, by the way. So the question or comment I had was, there are so many loopholes and so many regulations that families have to jump through, even if they do qualify for emergency shelter, and if they don't qualify, there are barely any shelters for them to go to. But when they do qualify, they're often trapped in these tiny motel rooms for months at a time due to the lack of affordable housing. And I just wanted to ask the Undersecretary and Ms. Workman what they had to say about this situation and what was being done to rectify this condition in the state. If we're planning to move families out of motel rooms, out of shelters, off the streets.
Got it, Marissa. It's a great question. And let me put that to the Undersecretary.
Sure,
Andrew
thank
Ruth.
You. And Marissa's right. It's no place for families to stay. And I mentioned that about the motels. We are now working very, you know, intensively with every family in the motel, meeting with them, trying to work on a plan to place them into permanent housing. There's a benefit of up to $4,000 that families now have under the home-based program. We are providing new rental assistance for those currently in shelter to try and move them out as quickly as possible. We're trying to access existing public and subsidized housing to the greatest extent we can. There are many, many strategies being employed, and we're working intensively trying to get those numbers down as quickly as possible, because it's not only better for the families, as I said before, it's much more cost-effective in terms of what our taxpayer dollars are being spent on. Let's spend it on more permanent approaches as opposed to having to put someone up in a motel at $3,000 a month. We're spending $50 million a year on motels, a total of $180 million for emergency shelters. Mm. And the legislature and the governor has asked our department to try and do better. We need to find more cost-effective solutions to ending the homelessness situation.
Ruth, let me ask you a quick question, though, and this is just to jump off of Marissa's question, and that is with regard to families having to jump through hoops. You know, I'm reading, and Aaron Gornstein mentioned this, 2,000 beds in family shelters across the state, the overflow, 1,700 or so people are housed in these motel rooms. Is this system, this sort of safety net system, overwhelmed?
Well, I think that there clearly is more demand than can be met, and the answer to this problem is more affordable housing, but that requires a very large investment. Mm-hmm. And this year, the shelter account was cut by $40 million, and only $6 million of that was put into the account that pays for rental subsidies, long-term rental subsidies. And none of those rental subsidies are going to the families who are being denied shelter. Hmm. So the administration often talks about how this isn't a housing-first approach, but it's not housing-first for the families who are being denied. But absolutely, we all agree that there need to be much more investments in the Massachusetts Rental Voucher Program, public housing. We need the Congress to step up and meet their obligations with respect to federal housing resources. But I want to say we all agree that motels are not a perfect place to be, but they're a heck of a lot better than a car or on the street, and in fact better than being in these very stressful double-up situations where people are having to beg night after night to be able to stay one more night.
Well, Aaron, Ruth there was mentioning the need for more affordable housing. You two have been disagreeing with each other respectfully. My guess is you would agree on that.
Oh, that's where I think there is most... There's common ground on actually most of the strategies we're pursuing. I think we're disagreeing on some regulations and how to have a targeted shelter system, how it's going to be most cost effective, and how to help families to avoid having to go into shelter. I think there's much more agreement than disagreement overall in terms of the legislature, the governor, and the administration, as well as the housing community.
The undersecretary mentioned the $4,000 of home base that is available to move families out of shelter. As a general matter, that amount of money is grossly inadequate in order to help a homeless family actually become housed for a year, which is what it's supposed to do. It's very valuable if someone has happened to come up on the top of a public housing waiting list and just needs moving expenses, where it's very valuable, but it is not permanent housing, and so it too is not housing first.
Those are the resources
we've
the legislature provided.
We've got 10 seconds left, Undersecretary. I'm happy to give you the last word, but go ahead. 10 seconds.
Well, I think we're putting forth comprehensive reforms. We're taking a new approach on homeless prevention and permanent housing while maintaining a safety net. We look forward to hearing additional input on the regulations, and we'll make adjustments if needed.
It sounds like there's a lot of feedback yet to come. Listeners, I'm sorry for those of you I didn't get a chance to get to. Please continue this conversation at radioboston.org. Aaron Gornstein, Undersecretary for Massachusetts Housing and Community Development, and Ruth Borquin, attorney with the Massachusetts Legal Reform Institute. Law Reform Institute. Sorry. Thank you both for coming in.
Thank you.
I'm
Anthony Brooks with Meghna Trakrabarty. There's more Radio Boston just ahead.